evening. What do you want to do tonight?
The same thing we do every night, Pinky. Try to take over the world.
Hey, friends. Welcome back to another episode of the Amber May Show. I'm really glad that you're joining me today because I have the owner of SRP24 joining me today. And that is Strategic Response Partners, Steve Schlepsevic, joining me today. And we're going to get down to his experience in natural disasters, especially in Lahaina. What did he see? What did he experience? And the things that he talks about in Lahaina are things that will break your heart. And then we go to the border situation, and he's gone down to the border several times. And we talk about the devastating effects of what he sees down at the border, with not just trafficking children, but the raping of kids, and the what could happen right here in the United States to your and I's safety. And we get into that on this episode. So please like, share, and subscribe. If you believe in what I'm doing, please consider becoming an angel investor. And the easiest way to do that is going to theambermayshow.com and hit the donate button. Or you could be a $5 monthly subscriber by going to theambermayshow.locals.com. I always add more content. Join me on Telegram at The Amber May Show. I'm on True Social, Amber May, Frank Social, Amber May, and Clout Hub. So find me there as well. So on today's show, we're going to get into communication issues. But right now, while everything's great, you need to take away your money from the big three. They're woke and they don't care about your rights or my rights. So you should join me and make the switch to PatriotMobile.com. They believe in freedom of speech and they support organizations that support our Second Amendment right. And we get into that on today's episode a little bit. But what do you need to do to be prepared in case of a huge disaster or the Summer of Love, where you have all these people destroying the city around you? So support organizations like the NRA or like Patriot Mobile. And when you make the switch to patriotmobile.com/amber, you're going to save on free activation. So we are building a parallel economy where we ditch the woke mobile, the big three. You're still going to have the access and the power to those towers, but you're not funding the left. So go to patriotmobile.com/amber today and get activated on a new wireless provider. Hey friends, like I told you, I have Steve Schlepsevic joining me today. He is the owner of SRP24.com, so he knows a lot about being prepared in disaster. So welcome, Steve, to the program. So glad to have you.
Well, thank you for having me, Amber. I appreciate your time.
Yeah, so I got to go back to the beginning. So disaster preparedness, you know, growing up as a little boy, most people, when they're asked, what do I want to do for a living? They want to be an astronaut, a firefighter, a policeman. How did you get into the business of helping people in different communities with their disaster relief programs? How did you come about that?
Well, for me, I was always, I've always found it interesting when I'd be watching TV and seeing people going down the river after a major flood in a makeshift boat, raft, you know, whatever, and carrying all their personal belongings, seeing people in front of their homes after a fire in the middle of the night, in their pajamas, you know, and my family comes from Serbia, right? So as a young kid, my uncles were in the contracting development field, and my parents were like, you know, especially my dad was, oh, you know, he's got strong back, you know, go to the beach, no beach, you go work with your uncles, you know. So digging ditches, tying rebar, setting forms, pouring concrete, setting walls, and framing in the summer was very common. And so I figured, you know, with that background on the contracting part of it, I was more like, I can help these people rebuild, you know. Mm-hmm. And some of my friends went into the fire service, and I was like, well, I don't really get that. You know, you go in there, it's a big fire. You go in there, you kick in the door, you spray it with a bunch of water, and then yahoo, there you go. And then they leave and the people are still standing in the street going, oh, that was a major disaster. Now what? And so always fascinated with disasters and how to pick up the pieces. So the first major event that I worked was shortly after Hurricane Andrew was there, that we, you know, did an assisted living facility. And then that spun off seeing how the insurance companies work and how the whole process of disaster response recovery was. Worked the 92 riots in LA, which was my backyard, right? Seeing all the chaos with the Rodney King situation and businesses being burned and setting up board up, temporary fence, and starting the reconstruction on those projects. Then in 94, I was 22, I think, at the time, around that age. And we had the 94 Northridge quake, which shook me out of bed. And I was down in Hermosa Beach. It shook pretty well. And I realized it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. And my phone just started ringing. My neighbors started showing up at my doorstep. Their water heaters had fallen over. Pipes were burst. And I just realized that, wow, this fire department had maxed out in 7 seconds. And they weren't responding to calls after 7 seconds. This is all of LA County. And so I realized there was a very big need in disaster zones to have private medical, private paramedics that aren't part of a department that could respond to private asset owners with medical services. I realized that after a major disaster, that it would be important to have a private security team, which is what we developed with Saber Defense Team, a private security contractor, to provide security services pre, during, and post any major disaster, especially like hurricanes. You could plan for those, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of how that whole process started, and the journey kept unfolding. And I got to say that along the journey, you know, when you speak out and you speak against some of these public groups and you start going against either big insurance or big pharma, and you're over the target, you become somebody that they go after, you know?
So
I learned my lesson.
Can you imagine that in our world, in our America, in our country that's supposed to be free? Can you, I mean, it's so hard to real, I mean, obviously we see it, we're seeing it all the time, but like, ideally that should never happen in our country. Our country is not a communist country. Our country is we the people, we for and by the people. And yet we're seeing that dynamic that you just talked about, where if you speak up and you say something because you're trying to do good, then you're the one who gets attacked and you're the little guy compared to all them. And all they want to do is smush the little guy so that they continue doing whatever they do. That it's not always helpful to the community. I mean, okay. So your family's from Eastern Europe. Now, I don't know much about that country. Is it a communist country? Is it like a democratic country?
Yeah. I mean, it was a communist country. It's more of a socialist type country.
Okay.
But it's quite interesting. I mean, they believe in more patriotic, I find, sometimes than even us Americans, you know?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was interesting because during COVID, one of the main things that I saw that was very different, which was in America, we started shutting everything down, right? Started closing businesses. We started making up all kinds of new rules and regulations and laws. And they weren't, some stuff was just, it was just, like things that didn't work. I mean, that common sense would be like, yeah, that doesn't work. But I remember watching the Serbian president come out and he spoke on a long presentation he gave to the Serbian people in Serbian about how they weren't going to shut the country down. Right. And one of the comments was about, you know, your mom, your wife, your grandmother, they've taken good care of you up until this point. You could trust on them. You don't, talked about the farmers and encouraging them to continue to produce food. And they, you know, basically shared about the fact that they've been through multiple wars, you know, and regardless of what squeeze they were going to get from the West and some of these globalists, they weren't going to shut down. You know, as a matter of fact, I think one of the mayors in one of the towns actually tried to shut it down and order a curfew. And the people that were of that town got into it with the police officers. And one of them was yelling at one of the officers saying, you know, you come back out tomorrow night. I'm going to come back to your house. I'm going to take your TV, your couches, and your car, you know? So it ended really quick. because people were all willing to stand up at the same time. And what I found disheartened about it was there were so few that were willing to stand up and actually fight against this mm-hmm. machine. Common mm-hmm. sense. And it's mm-hmm. like, where's the American patriot spirit? Now, I have to say, I was really proud because one of the best things that ever happened during COVID was seeing some of these firefighters that stood up and, you know, pushed back against it. And I have to say, COVID was one of the best things because I found my people, right? In that process, there was a firefighter, John Knox, with Firefighters for Freedom, who stood up and stood up against it in LA County, LA City, right? And then Sam Eaton out of Operation Freedom of Choice with Jason and Steven, you know, who now runs Raising Alphas. So these firefighters stood out even in Florida, because Florida was going through the same thing. People don't realize that. And then Sophie Medina and Paul, who stepped out, and Matt, who stepped out for Bravest for Choice in New York, and seeing them cross the Brooklyn Bridge with the huge American flag inspired us to get a whole group together. And then we showed up at the Capitol, not at the Capitol, sorry, at the Washington Memorial, the Washington Monument, and marched from the Washington Monument to the Lincoln Memorial. And there was a large group of us firefighters that were out there. And again, I'm not a firefighter, but I helped coalesce and get these groups together, you know, because I'm in the private sector, right? Mm-hmm. And standing on the steps with RFK Jr., all the frontline doctors, all the freedom fighters against the mandate, alongside with Del Bigtree and some of the biggest voices that became Defeat the Mandates. That was also organized by Matt Toon. Then we took that to LA, and one of the firefighters that's in the group also drove one of his restored fire trucks from one of the main stations downtown LA to the park where we had the Defeat the Mandates. And through the streets of LA, we had a huge march hauling the flag along that park. But the inspiration for those that were willing to stand up, that's where we joined forces. And mm-hmm. those are the same people I work tandemly mm-hmm. in disaster zones, because those people have a special type of character that for me is that those are the guys I'll hire every single day, because people like that you cannot mm-hmm. find on Indeed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That have the character, that have the courage, that when the government or someone's doing something that's illegal or that's just by human nature is just wrong. Mm-hmm. Have the courage to stand up and say, you know what? I'm not standing for that.
Right.
I'm not going to go along. You can do whatever you want. You can sign whatever agreements. But what people don't understand, when did we give the 5,000 permission over us 8 billion?
Exactly. Exactly.
Under what pretext? Mm-hmm. Right? No. We declare independence from you 5,000. Do whatever you want. Sign your pandemic treaties. That's not how we envision the world. Mm-hmm. This is how we envision the world. It's a space of love. It's a space of freedom. We're going to do farming that we're going to do. We're going to go back to the basics. Clean air, clean water. Keep the poisons mm-hmm. out of our children. Keep the poisons out of our food. Mm-hmm. Let's bring back America as to the beacon of light that it once was, that's currently fading.
And that's what I think why you saw people in, where did you call it? What country was it?
Serbia.
In Serbia, standing up, because they already know that their freedoms are very limited in a social type of government. And here we're just conditioned to believe that we're supposed to be free. Our constitution gives us freedom. It stops the government from coming down on us. But we think, oh, since we have the constitution, our government will never, or big government or big corporations will never infringe. And so then we're not, I think it got us into a place of complacency. And so I also think on the other side of the coin, when you do see people that are like, wait a minute, I'm not buying the Kool-Aid that they're giving us. Courage begets courage, I also think, because it's kind of scary to step your foot out, especially on TV when they make you feel like you're the only one who believes this. And so by you stepping out and some of the other firefighters and some of the other people in the freedom movement have stepped out, I think courage begets courage. And then people realize, oh, wait, I'm not alone in thinking this way or thinking that way or thinking, oh, they've gone too far with this. So I appreciate you, you know, stepping out and doing something so big. I mean, I bet you just think, I'm just one guy, you know, I'm just a dad, I'm just a husband, I'm just one guy. But look at what one guy did. Look what you did. I mean, you helped organize a big...
I always say it's not about me, right? Because what I've learned a long time ago is simply trust God. Step into the unknown. Lead into the fear. Because if any type of fear comes up, if you step into that space, there's no way around it. It's called going through it, right? And I always know that I'm a person who works from the space of leading from the back. Like, I'm not the leader from the front. I never need the big seat, right? But I inspire, I empower, I encourage. And by doing that, I have to be that example. How can I be that if I'm not willing to step out and risk it all? You know,
my point was more so that people kind of think, I'm just a nobody, I'm a nothing. What can I do? So my point is, what can one person do? Well, you did something. You were one person and you did something and it impacted the community around you. I mean, what if Martin Luther King Jr. never stepped out for civil rights? I mean, he was one man. That argument. So my point is that argument can be made, but I think it's a false argument because throughout history, we've seen what one person can do. And I appreciate you stepping out and fighting for our freedoms, you know, because we need to do that. You know, freedom's only one generation. We're one generation away from losing our freedom. And speaking of, you know, freedom, stepping out, doing something. Okay, so you're a part of disaster relief and you're into trying to rebuild your communities and the communities around our country. You recently went to Maui, if I understand that correctly, right? Lahaina, is that correct? Yeah,
that's correct.
I would love to hear your story, but before we get into that, I want to share this video that your team created, and it was phenomenal because I think it gets into the heart of what happened in Lahaina, and it's a great representation, a great, here it is.
The spirit of aloha, the people of this island coming together to help each other in a time of crisis, given the magnitude of the tragedy this community is facing.
Hawaii residents say they had to take matters into their own hands to get basic supplies to people in need who were desperate after the Lahaina fire.
Never in my life would I have imagined that we would have something like this, a catastrophe of an unequal disaster.
We're hearing disturbing new details and a rescue operation that never arrived. We're talking many people spending several days in the dark without power, without food and water before taking matters into their own hands.
Well, the first thing is right when we arrived on the island of Maui, right behind the fires, here's our capabilities. Here's what we have available to you. Everything from power generation, cables, electricians, whatever's needed to set up a base camp, mobilize and actually start rendering aid and services to that area. There was a really strong arm approach to, we got this handle. And I said, clearly, you don't.
The fire was so fast and the flames were so intense and big, and you've got embers blowing by the size of baseballs. Nothing seemed real. I'm running, screaming, thinking my dog's dead. I'm not making it. It's all on fire. Everything's on fire. And, front street's gone, it's gone. It's like people are dead everywhere. And I'll never forget, I just lost everything.
There was no helicopters that came. No one knew. There were people had gone and picked their kids up from school and brought them home and left them home. There was no warning. Fires went from 4 o'clock until 7 o'clock at night going. No military came. The whole community is mourning the deaths of over 1,500 people. They killed innocent men, women, and children by not helping, by not sounding alarms. People were asleep in their homes with their babies and their children.
Coming from this direction behind the homes, yeah, is our immediate concern to try and minimize any more damage.
When we came into Maui, it was like a ghost town from a standpoint of support. This is a toxic mess. This is not a wildland fire. This is a gigantic commercial structure fire. It's houses, it's cars, it's residential structures.
This was a wind-driven fire. But they said the winds were caused by a hurricane over 500 miles to the south of the Hawaiian Islands. I'm from South Florida 40 years. That just doesn't happen. Whatever caused the winds, they were sustained at 70 miles per hour.
It was like a blowtorch blowing through Lahaina. You're seeing locals having to do things that normally the government would be there actually providing. They were bringing in food and supplies from the waterside because they couldn't get in through the roadways because they were blocked off by the government. So my heart goes out to the Maui people. They did not get the support that they needed.
The most important thing, regardless of how the fire started or how the water got spoiled, is what are we going to do about it? How long is it going to take? How are we going forward from here? How are we going to remediate the burn areas, detoxify them? Let's use this burnt blank slate and move forward. The aloha. That's the most important thing.
It takes more than a fire.
The people in Hawaii are not ones to lay down and just take it. They're going to stand up. They're going to rise up, and they're going to hold these people accountable. Started to realize now, it's a huge awakening. Sad that it would come to this, but they're starting to realize, really, it's the Hawaiian people helping the Hawaiian people.
Man, that video was very compelling, and I remember how much I just felt for the people of Lahaina and how angry I felt that it didn't just seem like it was a regular fire. To me, that was something more notorious. And when I looked at some of the facts, they weren't adding up. This group is saying this on public releases. Here's what the government's saying. I mean, even out of their mouth, they were talking about taking land away. So what was your experience going there? What did you see? What did you observe? What did you find when you went there?
Oh, Amber. You know, I've been in this space for a little over 33 years, okay? I've worked a lot of wildfires. I can tell you without a doubt that there was stuff that was absolutely unexplainable that I've never seen in any other wildfires before, okay? The evidence that I still own and have in possession, I put in front of multiple firefighters, including raw video from multiple things that we observed on the ground, because we were there the day after. Like, we got in right behind that fire. And the way that it happened was I got a call from some of the asset owners that I know, because I work with the commercial real estate aspect of it. So some of them that lost their entire hotel that was about 2 weeks from opening, a beautiful boutique hotel right in Lahaina, a big shopping center, a production place that does a lot of art stuff. So multiple calls that came from there. But I also at the same time got calls from the native Hawaiians in the big wave surf community. Now, I've been surfing out there since I've been 19, right? And my first project actually was in the big island of Kona for a two-car garage in a lanai that I did for my friend's parents. And I was like 19 or 20 at the time. And I did it just in exchange so they would buy me an airline ticket and a place to stay. And I did the drawing, submitted the plans, got everything done, only for a place to surf. So I built a good rapport with them, but sitting in that group of all these Hawaiians, and I'm the Haole, right? But to me, I've never taken from the islands. I've always learned from my Serbian culture that when you go to someone's house, you bring gifts, you never take,
right?
You know? And so I sat there and I laid out the entire thing for them, because I'm used to how wildfires and disaster zones work, but Hawaii was very unique and different. So not going to go down in the nefarious acts and who would have interest in burning a city like that down, which is the Hawaiian kingdom, right? This goes back to the 1700s where it was founded. And, but if you're going to create that type of environment, you know, and you have the plans for it, well, what better way to do it on a natural disaster than to burn the whole thing down? Okay. So without getting down that track, I made it very clear in that circle that night with some extremely well-known 12 generation Hawaiians that they're like, they're going to take our land. I said, nope, you're going to give it to them. I'm like, no, what do you mean you're going to give them to him? I said, I'm going to break it down real simple. For those of you guys that have insurance on your property, you may get loss of use to live somewhere else for 1 year. If you have a really good policy, maybe 2 years. I said, environmental cleanup won't begin for even 1 year. And I understand mostly generational families didn't have insurance because they weren't required to have insurance because they had no mortgage on it, right? I said, the remediation, the plans, the slow moving, the politics, it may be a year before they even start the environmental cleanup. I said, then it'll take another year for the environmental cleanup, which is exactly to date, exactly what's happening. As if I basically forecasted it. Well, 33 years of doing this, I kind of know what goes on, right? I'm not reinventing the wheel. This happened everywhere. Then you have, once that year's done, before the fire ever happened, it took over a year to get permits in Maui anyway. Now, with this many people pushing to get permits, that's going to be another year. You're looking at 3 years before you break ground on your property. Now, you just got paid for 1 year to live somewhere else. You have a slab. Now you go in with your plans. And your plans, you might have had a 3-foot setback, maybe a 5-foot setback between you and the neighbor's house, because most of these were plantation homes, right? And so then now you have where you needed, say, a 10-yard setback on all sides, maybe 16 feet from the front. Now all the utilities are going underground. The roadways have to be adjusted. So there's rezoning going on. Now your house also requires fire sprinklers. You may have an insurance policy that has no code upgrade. Now, if you're down by the water, FEMA flood zone may require you go 17 feet above sea level, which requires concrete caissons, pylons for you to be put your stuff on. The people don't have the money. And if you take people and you start relocating them, they start to seat themselves in that business, in that community, and do the work there. It's going to be very hard for them to come back and repopulate that area. And at the end of the day, why would you? If your grocery store is down, if your neighbors are gone, and some people start rebuilding, you have a home here, a business here, but everything else is missing in between. You don't want to be reminded of that trauma, of that neighbor died in the fire. This person never got accounted for. These children are still missing, right? So I don't have to go very far. You can just go to Hurricane Katrina. Go from Pascagoula, go through Slidell, and you'll still see FEMA trailers and empty lots and properties that never rebuilt after the hurricane. Right? Go to Malibu. Malibu, where my family lives in Agoura Hills, they're just, some of them are just starting the building process now.
Wow.
Okay, this is going on, what, 4 or 5 years? So, you know, it's very stressful for those that don't have to eventually give up those properties. And my heart goes out to the Hawaiian people and also the firefighters that were actually really, I mean, who turns off the water to the fire hydrants?
Exactly.
Who cuts the power to be able to run some of the stuff that need to be run? And then what about the communications, right? Where people couldn't communicate on their cell phones. I mean, my team, every one of my family members carries a sat phone with them, right? All my kids, we have an internal plan because I know that I can't respond to the hospitals, the ports, the airports. These are all private entities, these big assets that call us. I can't respond to them if my family's in crisis.
Right.
And one of the best ways to control chaos is through communication. Mm-hmm. And if your comms are shut down, that's something you just don't have, you know?
Hey, I'm going to get to that thought in just a second, but right now I'm going to take a quick break. Hey guys, I want to give you a pro tip to help keep your family healthy when everyone around you is coughing, sniffling, or sneezing, okay? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to go first to drstellamd.com. When you're there, go ahead and grab some COVID bites. Also, get your ivermectin, set up your telemed appointment, and get your ivermectin. I'm gonna give you a promo code to help you save some money, and use promo code AMBERMAY, one word, and that'll help you save money. Now, here's your pro tip for you. You can use this on your entire family. The adult doses too. I've talked to a medical expert. They said cut it in half when you're dealing with children, so one tablet. What I do with my kids, because it's just too big of a pill for them, I get a blender, I put a pill in there, I fill it with water and like some flavoring, and then boom, I have them drink it before school. Pro tip, and what it has, and it's amazing. It has quercetin, vitamin D, vitamin C, zinc, all the therapeutics to help keep your body healthy and working at optimum health. Support your body's immune system when you use the Kobe Bites. They're amazing. So go to drstellamd.com, grab your Kobe Bites, get your ivermectin, use promo code AmberMay, and save some money.
Hey, I'm Christina Bob, and you are listening to The Amber May Show.
Looks like you've been sleeping well.
Megan, he's back. The MyPillow guy.
And you're looking good.
Still feeling good.
Well, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, we've got the best pillow ever, MyPillow 2.0.
The best sleep just got even better. Whether you have a MyPillow or not, you need to get the brand new MyPillow 2.0. Call or go to MyPillow.com now. Use your promo code, and for a limited time, when you buy one, you'll get a second one absolutely free.
You are listening to The Amber May Show, and now we return to the show already in progress.
Mm-hmm. So, yes, you know, Hawaii was a disaster that could have been avoided. It could have been prevented. There's no excuse. The fact that, and again, I just want people to be reminded that, you know, it comes up for election cycles. These people vote the same kind of clowns back in, right? An emergency director that has, what's their background? What makes them the trained individual, and what are their drills? How often do the drills where they actually run drills and test the systems and put protocols in place? We do this for large organizations all the time privately, but in the public sector, it's an absolute disaster based on results, and results don't lie.
Well, I just saw this news article. To your point, I was kind of showing you the water, trying to find that water article to show you, hey, they're still dealing out of all these months, just to your point, out of like a year now, they're still dealing with water issues and building, like you said. So this article said that a community leader nonprofit awarded $400,000 to aid Lahaina homeowner recovery, but that's only, they're only 500 people are going to be able to get any money, $400,000. And honestly, I don't know how much it costs to rebuild a home. I don't know if that's enough. I'll tell you what, it's better than $700 that the federal government gave. Tell me about the response of the government, because what I was hearing far away from Lahaina is it took a long time for the federal government to come in. I mean, our quote unquote former Vice President Joe Biden came but fell asleep during some of the meetings, and all they got was $700 from the federal government. Now, how long did it take for them? Did you see any aid from the government while you were there?
No, the government's response was horrific, right? Oahu is just across the island where one of our biggest military bases are. There's nothing that kept them from pushing an aircraft carrier and actually be able to deploy and respond within the next day. We do this for other countries. We drop billions and we put mm-hmm. aircraft carriers, we send military aircraft, and we drop off supplies the next day. Mm-hmm. A war breaks out, we're there, right? This happens in our own country, and a week later you show up.
Mm-hmm.
Even them sweeping the bodies, the SEALs didn't show up until I think a week later to sweep the ocean floor.
Wow.
For bodies. I mean, this is stuff that's case in point. Environmental wise, you know, the first thing we did was we went in there and did some testing of homes immediately on our own dime to show the toxic, the levels of toxicity, the carbon, the ash, the soot, the carbon black, the particulate matter that gets into the lower lungs. It doesn't clear out. That is one of the areas that causes cancer. So I was showing these people's homes based on the certified industrial hygienist that went and did the sampling, how toxic the homes were, how to do the properly, you know, wear respirators, wipe down their homes, wet wipe everything down, how to go into a fire zone in and out, how to wipe themselves down, how to, it's with PPEs, how to protect themselves when they're walking in and out of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And we shared it with the Department of Health, who then asked us for permission to go ahead and use the document. I said, absolutely. Here it is, just the actual Word document, throw your logos on it, make the changes, but this is what needs to be done, right? Actually, Sam Eaton, one of the firefighters, former battalion chief that works for SRP, is part of the Cancer Coalition Collaborative for Florida on the clean cabs for firefighters and the cancer group. And so he helped put that document together immediately. And we got that out there for the general public to know how to move around there. But when you see Joe Biden come in there with his cronies, right,
Mm-hmm. And he's walking down through the center of a fire zone that's still off gassing. There's particulate everywhere, not wearing any mask, not wearing any PPEs, right? That's sending the wrong message to the people. Then gets back in his car and then puts a mask on. You know, there's no way to enter a hot zone like that to me. And the thing is, I'm not afraid to speak out because everyone's thinking it that's in the environmental side of it. Like, what are you doing? You know, basically walking through that fire zone, putting all that stuff all over your feet, stepping into a vehicle, right? Cross-contaminating, pushing that stuff out to areas that are clean, that are not contaminated. There's there's dioxins, there's all types of serious concerns. And then that site where they're moving all this debris and they set these layers that have shown that just completely fail with these underground streams right next to the ocean. They call it a temporary site, but everyone knows it's permanent. They're not moving it off island. It's going to take them a year to put all that stuff there. And that stuff's going to leach into the ocean, which is going to produce all types of heavy metals, toxins that the fish are going to eat.
Oh, yes.
Absorb through their skin, which is one of your largest organs.
Mm-hmm.
And the cancers, the leukemias, the birth defects, all these things that are going to show up down the road years later, people won't, many times won't be able to correlate it. And if they do, they'll get shut down. No, it's not from that.
Of course it's not.
You know,
I was seeing an article too. I was hoping I could find it really quick that talked about the ocean and what was happening as a result of the fire and how it was contaminating some of the wildlife in the ocean. But I don't know that I can find it very quickly, but you're absolutely right. I mean, that's what's happening right now. And unfortunately, I won't be able to find it this quickly. And it's breaking my heart. So, okay. You're right. It's taken about a year for anything to happen. So what are these people doing? Are they leaving the island? Are they selling?
Yeah. Some are leaving, some are relocating, some are finding business elsewhere. Some are just done with that part of it, you know, demographically. Right. And the sad thing is this is Hawaii's 9/11, right?
Yes.
It took an act of Congress to be able to show that the toxins, the cancers, all the stuff that happened with the firefighters and first responders that worked on the towers, that all that developed afterwards, you know? So yeah, you got to take the environmental issues absolutely serious on every level, you know?
So speaking of lack of government support for Lahaina, you and I live on a border state and they tell us there's no issues with the border. It's the most secure border ever. And I know you have been down to the border. I'd love for you to talk about the things you've experienced down at the border.
Yeah. I live about 40 miles from the border in San Diego, North County area. And when this new administration took over, I got a couple phone calls from some law enforcement that work on the border saying, hey, we're getting overrun. And I know you run a very highly trained and skilled drone team on both thermals, racing, surveillance type drones. Could you come in here and volunteer, give us some little bit of time just to kind of oversee and help us with some of these apprehensions and or tracking some of the very difficult areas? So I'm like, yeah, absolutely. And then it started from one weekend, and then it kept going on to multiple evenings to 3.5 years of multiple trips all along the border from San Diego, Arizona, all the way down to Texas, all the way to La Jolla, Texas, and working with the border sheriffs, helping them on multiple apprehensions, multiple night ops. I mean, I don't know that America's aware of how bad the crisis is. And people say, oh, there's not that. People are still coming over like they did with the prior administration. It's not political. I really don't care about it. I'm like, okay, well, all you have to do is public record. You can see how many arrests were done each day during the prior administration. And you can see how many arrests were done during this current administration. And it's astronomical because we do not have the facilities to hold the people. That's why you see the mass release of pickup, process, let them out, because they don't have facilities to house them. And the biggest problem is this: I run a private security company, right? That we built and developed, right? And it's expanding. It's getting all this other stuff that's being put behind it as the need is starting to get work, you know, bigger and bigger. With 1,000 men that are highly trained, you can shut it down entire LA. You can shut down Los Angeles down with 1,000 men doing something that's disruptive. Do you follow? Mm-hmm. There's over 200,000 of those type of men at minimum. At minimum. And when people say, you know, this is a Trojan horse that's coming in through our borders. And they're not showing up at the migrant hotels. People are not tracking them. And if I was another country that America invaded under weapons of mass destruction on this industrial and endless war machine, mm-hmm. that took my family members out, mm-hmm. and I hate America, and there's a lot of countries that have a real distaste mm-hmm. for America, mm-hmm. and they found a way to come into America, it's orchestrated. Mm-hmm. And I feel that Americans are going to wake up when it's a little too late and we become extremely complacent, you know? And I hate to say it, but I feel that we're going to see it going into this election cycle. And it's going to create a sense of either martial law or shutdown. But if you look at what's happening among multiple cities, is the crime rate is going through the roof. Why? Mm-hmm. As I talk to these head yep. county sheriffs that are personal friends of mine, you know, the underground gambling, the prostitution, the drugs, the organized crime, the breaking of the burglaries and robberies that are being done in all the areas from Michigan to Palos Verdes to Beverly Hills, it doesn't matter. The Chilean, Honduran, Venezuelan gangs that are organized are just now operating in our country. Mm-hmm. And you dismantle disenfranchise the law enforcement with these weak DAs that are purposely put in by Soros mm-hmm. that don't enforce the laws. You're basically encouraging crime to continue to happen. Mm-hmm. Retail, a lot of businesses are going out of businesses, and it's giving truly the government more control over the people.
I mean, you just look at what happened to the New York cops that got beat almost to death by these illegals. And they get out in less than 24 hours from prison or from jail. I mean, come on. They got beat. They beat down police officers. They're not U.S. citizens. And yet they get out on the street at this turnaround, because you're right. The Soros thing, that was all strategic. They wanted the soft down crime approach, because when you study how they want to bring in communism to a country, they have to disrupt a lot of things. And yeah. one of the things they do is they go after the people's protection. And who is that? Police and fire. So they have to make it so chaotic that the police and fire cannot do their job, because it's too much. It's overwhelming. There's not enough manpower. And so you Amber. Think about the people that go into this line of work, and I honestly believe it's a calling from God, just like yeah. being a pastor or a priest. I think it's a calling by God, because he knows there's a sin problem and he needs people to protect it. So you imagine these strong men that have this calling to protect their community and they can't. Can you talk to me about when you're talking to these Border Patrol, the deputies, the police, how are they feeling in this particular moment?
Yeah, this started with Obama. Mm-hmm. Obama started the whole process of actually not supporting law enforcement. Mm-hmm. And so law enforcement now, these are friends of mine that show up at a scene and they'll get big gulps, Cokes thrown at them. Everyone's got their phone out there. They're recording every little bit of it. They're trying to get their two minutes of fame, you know, engaging, harassing a police officer, somebody who's there really just to bring peace to the neighborhood, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Are there a couple guys that maybe went off the rails? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if you antagonize law enforcement on and on and on, right? And then also you remove the protective shield from a city that protects that officer, that if the officer does something in not right by the book, by the training, a lawyer steps in, sues them, and then that officer goes to prison. Those officers don't want to show up. They don't exactly. even, and that's why there's a shortage of law enforcement people coming into the academies, And then the other part of it is these guys that are running these different departments. This is case in point. This is from their ear, from their mouth to my ears. Steve, we slow roll the scene. There's a shooting. We get a call. We don't engage. We go by. We look at a distance. We maybe even drive by, go around the block. Let them kill each other. Slow pull back up into the scene. And then call medics, call EMS, and let them pick up the bodies. Don't engage. That's not policing. And that's why more and more people are going, oh, shit, it's going to take 15 minutes if I'm lucky for the cop to show up.
Mm-hmm.
I better get armed. I better go get my concealed carry, right, my CCW. I'm a law-abiding citizen, but I know I can't count on law enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll be damned if some guy with a stolen gun shows up and puts a Glock to my head, and I'm that little bitch that didn't get trained. Sorry, but I'm the guy that didn't get trained, and now I'm going to pay the price. My wife's going to pay the price. I'm going to live with the consequences of going, oh, I'm anti-gun. No, my wife's trained. My daughter's trained. My son, who's autistic, doesn't really like the sound.
Mm-hmm.
I got him a Burma. You know, it's a hard plastic, airsoft, right? And I got him a taser. Mm-hmm. Kid. You get in a situation that someone's threatening your life and they're approaching you. You know, I pray to God that you know, he'll protect him, but at least he has some skill sets. Mm-hmm. Not to mention I had him in mixed martial arts for a long time, and he's not a little kid. He's a big kid. You know, he's a strong kid, but he's one of the most loving, compliant kids in the world. I can't complain about that. His dad was a little different, you know, but yeah, no, it's really disheartening. It's really disheartening what's happening to law enforcement. Unless you have a leader that's backing them from the top to the bottom, you're not going to turn this around.
And not only that, but remember under the Trump administration, if someone wanted to claim a minor that they supposedly it's their kid, there was a DNA test. Under this administration, he abolished the DNA test. So from a law enforcement perspective, I imagine it is really hard for these Border Patrol agents, for the law enforcement to turn over these people when it's very unlikely that they are related to these kids. So a lot of trafficking of children. I heard somewhere that America is one of the largest consumers of child trafficking. And that makes me so sick because, you know, we have these moral foundations of our country. To think that there's these adults out there that desire children and our government's complicit in that, and where they could shut down the border, where they could still do the DNA test, where they could support the law enforcement. Our federal government's in a dereliction of duty. And it's unfortunate that he hasn't been impeached for dereliction of duty to support the number one job of the federal government, that's to protect the homeland. He's more concerned about Ukraine than he is about the American people. And we all know it's not, he's just the face and someone else behind him's running things. But when you look at the overall picture of the last 4 years, we just got the news that the consumer price index went up to 3.5%, which is higher than February, which means our purchasing power has dwindled down, which means the cost of everything goes up. So we're poor. People in Lahaina, we just talked about, they're displaced. Our government didn't do very much to them. The people of East Palestine, they're finally getting something done over there. But they didn't even get 1 cent, to my knowledge. And then you see the boat that just took down a bridge that I think is very suspicious. I mean, that's where a lot of goods and services come into that community. And now that's really disrupt things over there. And I think we're going to continue to see these disruptions because of especially it being an election season, and they don't want to lose their power in this next election. So they're going to do whatever they can. And so when you talk to law enforcement, I bet you probably the number one thing that aches them the most is the child trafficking. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, what people don't talk about is all the rape trees that are throughout the entire southern border, right? Where women and children are being raped. There was a 11-year-old, 12-year-old girl that came across the border. She was bleeding. We thought maybe she had her period.
Medics came up, only find out that she was raped. They had 7-8 different DNAs in her, you know. A little boy who got raped so that his sister could continue on the trip with the cartels. A father, and that was with Robert Kennedy Jr. when we took him to the border. There was a father, it's in his video on YouTube called Midnight at the Border, where his 18-year-old daughter got pulled off one of the transfer buses by the cartels, and he hadn't seen her. And it was days that he was there waiting at the transfer center, hoping that she would show up, right? And he had his younger kids and his wife with him. The times that we would cross, we'd run into groups that we'd apprehend. And the kid, you could see the kids pushing away from the parent. And they're trying to, I'm asking them, you know, how old is your boy, right? And the person's like, 3. The woman's saying 4. I'm like, okay, maybe you want to get your stories a little straight, because we're very direct. And when you're clear and you're grounded and you're approaching somebody and they're not clear, they're lying, they're having a really hard time because they're going into their ego mind. They're not speaking from the heart, which you can see where the lies are coming from. What's your son's name? Nicholas. I'm like, which is it? Right? Mm-hmm. Just your kid. Like, you know, and you can see the kid looks nothing like the parents. Right? So many kids, what we found, were being smuggled back and forth across the border that would give them permission to come through and just be processed and let go. Right? There's a group of kids that we came across. Their pupils were dilating. They were all drugged on either Benadryl or something, like, just, they weren't even there. They couldn't even talk. Right? And these single males coming across, and everyone had the same story. My wife left me. I had no place to go. It's the same garbage. Yes, the child trafficking. But when you look at the laws in California to buy a child, it's a misdemeanor. Right? Yeah. So this, you would be like, what? How's that even possible in this day and age? Right? That should not only be a felony, you should go to prison for life. And the difference is, in Serbia, I'm going to give you this because I always have a reference point, right? My cousins, I remember as a young man when I went there, when I was much younger, I would be like, you know, what do you find so funny about America? He goes, oh, that's right. You guys have credit and you guys have pedophiles. We don't have credit. If you don't have the money, you don't buy it. And here, if you touch a child, you live one day. I'm like, what do you mean you live one day? He goes, the judge will sentence you to prison. The prison guards will turn their back, and the yard, the people, the prisoners will kill that man and they'll drag him out. And that's how the justice works in Serbia, right? He goes, how do you think it is? I said, he goes, my daughters can be at any house in this village. That parent gets to discipline my child, takes full responsibility for my child on the well-being of my child. My teenage daughter can go to the bar. I know when she steps into the bar, I know who she's talking to. I have a chaperone there and the bartender. We all communicate. Mm-hmm. I know when my daughter leaves, who she leaves for, how long it takes her from there to get to my house. He goes, it takes a village to raise a child. You guys forgot what that meaning is. And the people of America, and I'm American, okay? Mm-hmm. But I also have a background that I see my parents who escaped communism to come to this America for America's dream. America's lost its way. We forgot what it means to go through tough times, you know? And so we're stuck in our phones, right? We're getting socially programmed. Don't speak out. How does that happen? But wait a minute. If I post this, I may get deplatformed.
So if true.
I may not get a lot of likes.
So I'll get defriended. I'll get defriended. Yeah. Yes.
So when I got deplatformed, I remember people going, dude, you had so many followers and, you know, you got family all over Europe that's paying attention to your posts. And they're like, do you not want to go back online? I said, actually, no, I'm actually enjoying all this freedom that I have right now. And they're like, what it is? I said, you know, it's interesting because if I go back on, I have to be careful what I post. Because it took a lot to build that. I said, I'm not doing that for that machine. It told me that I was simply over the target when I'm sharing truth about the border, when I'm sharing truth about gender dysphoria, right? And you know what? I'm not going to make no apologies. This is what I stand for. This is what I believe. And if something's coming up for you that's triggering you, that's your problem. That's something for you to take a look at. Because I only come from a space of love. I come from a space of honesty. And I'm not triggered. But I'm not going to change my beliefs to fit
your fantasy or your make-believe shit. No, I don't go for that, you know? The world's got real problems, right? So when I step into a store, I hear somebody complaining about their triple-filtered foam latte doesn't have enough caramel or this, that, whatever, the wrong temperature. Yeah. I said, man, you really don't have any problems. Step into a disaster zone right out of hurricane, have the whole place tear apart, have no food, no power, no water, on an island or in a third world country with your urban search and rescue team, and then tell me about how tough things are.
Mm-hmm. So we know that something's coming down the pike. We know that. And you're part of disaster relief. If you can give my audience briefly a few things that would help in an emergency crisis, what are some of the top things you would suggest that they have on hand?
Well, one thing is if you live in the city, I would find a place to fall back on quickly and not use main thoroughfares, because if any disaster zone, people all try to evacuate at the same time, all the main roads are blocked. So look for you know, streams that are dried riverbeds, places you can travel through that are back roads that are not going to be the common way to get out of it if you live in the city. If you're fortunate to live outside of a city or an area, you know, your main thing that you're looking for is food, shelter, water, right? You got to be able to have those main sustainable things, especially clean water. And then the main thing is also have a communication with your plan, with your family, a communication, right? And I always say like this, people are like, okay, we're going to set a community plan. No. It starts with me first.
Mm-hmm.
I got to check where I'm at spiritually, physically, mentally. Do I have the capabilities to be that? I can't ask somebody to be at that level if I'm not willing to stay in shape, eat healthy, exercise, spiritually be on my knees, connected to God, because this time and age, it's going to be about discernment of the spirit, mm-hmm. man. This is a spiritual warfare, and yes. You can have all the best training in the world, but if you're spiritually not in tune,
mm-hmm.
nothing else matters. So spiritually, physically, mentally, create a plan. To me, I always say you have to have an alternative sense, form of communication, because the first thing they're going to do, if I was in that playbook, was I would shut comms off. I'd kill the internet. Obama installed that kill switch. If you see 50 senators on the left in case of a crisis got sat phones, I'd pick up a sat phone. Personally, I think it's one of the best investments in insurance policy, right? Mm-hmm. Not just for myself, but also for my wife and my kids. Then for me, I have it with every one of our team members has a sat phone. And then all my emergency response vendors, my food provider, my water guys, my fuel cells that provide fuel for our teams, our generators, our temporary power, everything. Everything's already lined up, and all those things we do regular drills on, so that if all comms go out, I can still move and function. If the satellites come out of the sky, well, then it's pretty much over for everybody, and all the planning you do can't help. And the next thing, the most important thing is I say always stock up on ammo. Ammo's going to go up and have firearms, but it don't just have a firearm. It's like going to Guitar Center and buying a guitar, and that doesn't make you a musician. Get training, whether you get into a simulation room, CQB training, join a gun club, a Second Amendment group that believes in protecting their Second Amendment and the importance of it. Support politicians that are in support of the Second Amendment. And just get, you know, your basic food, water type stuff. Yes, but I don't overdo it. I also have resources that I know that I got to go step two and step three. And I can, you know, in those aspects of it. So, and again, there's on our page, if you go to srp24.com/prepare, there's a page that I created you can't find it on the main site. I created it just for people that are asking, hey, how do I do this? You know, you can download a template there. Yeah, there's some vendors on there that you're welcome to review, search other vendors, compare your stuff. Just get your house in order.
For those of you that are preppers out there, I've partnered with Prepper All Natural. Prepper offers amazing high quality cooked and freeze dried beef along with long term storage. Eat well today and tomorrow. And you can check out their food at freedomfirstbeef.com. That's freedomfirstbeef.com. And when you're there, use promo code Amber at checkout to save some money. So freedomfirstbeef.com, promo code Amber at checkout. Thank you for joining us today on The Amber May Show. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Please make sure you like, share, and subscribe. And if there's someone that came to mind, please share this episode with them. Please follow us on Telegram at The Amber May Show, True Social Amber May, Frank Socially Amber May, or Clout Hub. I can't wait to see you next time on The Amber May Show.